In today's political apocalypse, why are some people drawn to even more post-apocalyptic fantasy worlds? Probably because Chuck Wendig has written about it. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton dives into the author's most recent book, Thunderbird. Next, we look into the future with a talented author, but not before we discuss the new Star Wars take on humanity.
And this is the message I always sort of take away from Star Wars, that the ability of a small group of people can change the whole galaxy, or in our case, the world. So it's not necessarily about giant governmental bodies, but it's about individualism and how they can, you know, you can change the world and really affect it and become important in that place.
Techonomics on KGO 810 starts now.
All right, here's an intro that works for story-loving people and story lovers who are also nerds. Chuck Wendig is not only a New York Times best-selling author, he's also a screenwriter and a game designer. He's a triple threat, right? After our chat, which is coming up soon, check out his site at terribleminds.com for some colorful examples of his creativity that is not in book form. If you already know the Miriam Black series, then you're stoked that Thunderbird, the fourth book, recently dropped. If you're not familiar, here's a book blurb snippet that summarizes, quote, Miriam is becoming addicted to seeing her own death visions, but she is also trying out something new, hope. Here's my chat with the author.
Chuck Wendig, author.
Author of, well, let's see. Let's start with your new one, Thunderbird. That's coming on the heels of another best-selling series you have, Star Wars Aftermath. So maybe that's the better place to start. Let's talk a little bit about Star Wars Aftermath. What was the origin story for that one?
The origin story there is a little unconventional in that, obviously, I grew up with Star Wars. I didn't just grow up with it. I've been more or less been marinating in the Star Wars universe since I was, 4 years old. And I went on Twitter, and I publicly wished on Twitter to one day write a Star Wars novel. And literally a few months later, I was writing a Star Wars novel. So that is not normally how I would get work, but it worked in this case. I think I had the Force for like 4 seconds. I had the Force.
That's awesome. That is a great origin story. I always like to start there because you just never know. And what about some of your process? I mean, how long did it take you after you got that initial tweet and then you were up and running?
That one was a little trickier because we had to write a book very quickly. They wanted books out for the release of The Force Awakens. We had to move pretty quickly. Now, the good news is because I had been working in freelance writing for, over a decade before that. So I'm pretty familiar with deadlines and pretty familiar with how to write quickly. So I wrote actually the first draft of the first Aftermath book in about 30 days.
Whoa.
Now, I mean, obviously subsequent drafts took time beyond that. But most of my drafts are usually about a 30 to 90 day process. So.
Okay. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
And I know you have your new book, Thunderbird, coming out, and I will get to that soon. But it just so happens that I had a recent guest on the show. His name is Drew Curtis. He started FARC.com. And sure. We kind of drifted into – so you know Drew and his work a little bit?
The work a little bit, sure.
Okay, cool. And so we drifted into Star Wars a little bit because we were talking about universal basic income. And I have another guest, Vivek Wadhwa, on who likes to talk about, is it going to be Star Trek or is it going to be Mad Max is the future? And then Drew was like, it's going to be more like Star Wars. And then he said something. and then he said, but Star Wars mythology is pretty dark. Yeah. What's your take on that, Star Wars mythology?
Well, Star Wars mythology, it's tricky because at the same time, it's not hyper optimistic, but it's optimistic at the individual level, right? You've got the ability, and this is the message I always sort of take away from Star Wars, that the ability of a small group of people can change the whole galaxy, or in our case, the world.
I see.
So it's not necessarily about giant governmental bodies, but it's about individualism and how they can, you can change the world and really affect it and become important in that place.
Okay, so you distilled that for me. I appreciate that. I'm talking to you, an expert. I had to ask about the mythology of Star Wars.
I just felt like I don't know about an expert, but no, sure.
Let's talk about your new gig. You've got a new cover out, the Thunderbird. That's part of a series, correct?
Yeah, that's actually the fourth book in the Miriam Black series. That's correct.
Okay, well, let's go back to the origin story for Miriam Black. How did you start this tale?
Miriam Black is a book that I wrote. I had already written prior to that 5 novels that had gone nowhere. They were novels that I had written, I think trying to maybe ape other people's voices or trying to chase the market and trying to chase my idea of what it would take to get published as opposed to writing the book that lived inside me, so to speak. So these 5 books tanked and couldn't go anywhere and I didn't get an agent and so on and so forth. So Blackbirds came about when I decided to write about things that were bothering me personally. Like I was coming to a point as sort of a younger person. I'm in my 20s and into my 30s. You start to realize that the true reality that we all die. We all kick off eventually. Both he realized it because my dad was dying of cancer and my grandparents had gone and so forth, an aunt of colon cancer. So, you know, I wanted to write this sort of twisted power fantasy about a character who could see how you were going to die by touching you. But she, at the time of the novel, starting the book, it's not something she knows how to fix. So she can see how people are going to die, but she can't do anything about it.
I see.
So the novel is about this character realizing what she can do about it and what her powers are over fate. You know, is she a sort of an avatar of free will? And of course, this messes her up a good bit. She's Miriam Black is a big broken cookie in terms of her character development, which is a lot of fun to write because she's, you know, she always makes the worst possible decision, which is a great deal of fun.
Right. And you said this is the most recent one of these, but it's apparently you're starting a whole new story arc, right?
Yeah, kind of a second trilogy, sure. The first three books sort of take her to one place, and then the new trilogy takes her to, ultimately, to an ending. The sixth book, Vultures, will be the end of her story for now.
Man, what is it with Star Wars people and trilogies? I mean, seriously.
We love them. But there's like a mythic arc. There's a mythic cut to, you know, to trilogies. And, you know, even storytelling is often broken up into that three acts.
I know.
Beginning, middle, and end. So you can sort of make it work.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, okay, fine. I'm going to go back and read your first three so that I can this is not a prequel. These next three are not going to be prequels, right?
No.
Okay, good, because that's math on the radio, and that's math on the radio, hard to do. So I have to say, your pre-press is amazing on these blurbs. You've got just hell yes, Wendig returns to his signature anti-heroine. Is she an anti-heroine? Is that the way you cast? She is. Okay, In your mind, she's actively anti-heroine. Okay.
Yeah, these are, I wouldn't quite call them noir, but I mean, these are sort of crimey, horror-y, urban fantasy, although really they're more rural fantasy. She is not a good person, but she's got this tiny little mote of light buried in a shower of darkness. And I think that's what keeps her interesting in these stories.
My producer is going to be so into this because she's asking me to ask you, in today's political apocalypse, why are some people drawn to even more post-apocalyptic fantasy? That's a great question, too, because, you know, if you look back at the 70s and you look at The Towering Inferno and Earthquake and disaster movies during a very tough and troubling political time as well, are you finding that these kind of worlds that you and other authors build get a little more attention?
Well, I don't know yet because we're sort of on the cusp of all that, right? Like, this book came out, and actually Thunderbird sort of presaged things I didn't know that it was going to presage. I mean,
nice.
It's sort of about a troubled, broken world and a militia in the Arizona desert who's sort of gearing up for a new civil war, and they hate the government but also want to replace the government. And there's sort of a domestic terrorism angle. So I didn't, you know, that stuff I thought would stay simmering on the pot, not boiling over. I didn't know that by the time the book would come out, a lot of this stuff would have boiled over. You know, I don't know. I don't know how people will respond to that. A lot of times, sometimes people, like with the disaster movies, they went for sort of a more metaphorical disaster. There was sort of a political social disaster going on, but they went for the more straight telling of it. They didn't necessarily attach themselves to stories of political upheaval, though in some cases they did, obviously spy thrillers and stuff at the time in the 70s. So I don't know. I have no idea what the response will be, but I'm hoping it's good.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're obviously very good at what you do because the best authors are basically like canaries in the coal mine. And so you were reading it. Maybe you didn't even realize you were reading what was coming, and then you wrote it down.
Yeah, I didn't. Hopefully I'm not literally like the canary because I'd like to find some clean air before
off. We'll pull you back out of that coal mine as soon as we can.
Good.
Hey, Chuck, so sci-fi versus sci-fi, right? So, like, how much of what you write about is plausible? I mean, unlike we just talked about, you didn't know this was going to happen this quickly, that kind of stuff,
yeah.
And some of your plot points. But have you found that to be kind of that your books are somewhat prescient in some ways?
Well, they are a little bit. You know, I've written two more straight-up science fiction near-future thrillers, Zeros and its follow-up, Invasive. And while they're not direct sequels to each other, they take place in the same world. And Zeros is about what happens when the government scoops up these sort of black hat hackers and it presses them into service. But they find out that there's a sort of a sinister conspiratorial surveillance plot inside the government and an artificial intelligence. And so they have to go against it, you know, as a sort of team of hackers. And of course, given with everything going on with WikiLeaks and Russian hackers, it all became, again, prescient. And then Invasive is about sort of the genetic modification of ants into this sort of killer ant plague. So thankfully that one hasn't happened yet. So fingers crossed I didn't accidentally presage an apocalypse or an ant apocalypse.
Yeah, ant apocalypse, right. That's terrifying to me. I have to think about ants.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's really pretty squeaky to write.
We're speaking with Chuck Wendig. He's a novelist, screenwriter, game designer. His newest book is called Thunderbird. And my last question for you, because I know we're kind of stressed for time, Do you ever get writer's block? I mean, I like to ask authors this because I don't write to any length that you do. I write essays sometimes, you know, longer blog pieces, sometimes thought leadership for clients. But I never get into writer's block. I just have to get up and walk around. What do you do?
Well, I tend to take a good long look at my mortgage payments, and then I think I better get to work. Writing is the whole writing career and the act of writing. A lot of times it's just putting a sort of a bucket on your head and trying to headbutt the wall until it falls down. Either you go down first or the wall goes down. Uh-huh. And the best thing you do is generally write your way through it. Writer's block. I mean, everybody gets blocked. We give writer's block power by calling it writer's block. But at the end of the day, you know, everybody has mathematicians, and I'm sure there's plumbers who are like, I don't know how to solve this problem at this exact moment. You just got to keep thinking about it and keep hammering away at it until you find the way forward. That's the best bet.
Right on. Persistence. Chuck, did I miss anything you wanted to include?
No, I think we're good.
Chuck, thank you so much for your time this morning. Wonderful series. Can't wait to read the next three.
Thank you for having me.
That was Chuck Wendig, author of the Miriam Black series. The most recent addition to the series, called Thunderbird, is available now. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoyed. This broadcast is modular. It means each segment is a podcast. You can get a link at kgoradio.com/techonomics. We are also at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. Please give us a like over there if you do visit, and we also post links to the music we use on each week's show. For producer Liana Wilcox and executive producer Mike Anthony, I'm Jason Middleton, and this has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.